because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin's Eye, summary of this week in the Capitol. Okay, J.R., where are we now? The regular fall session has ended. Help me keep score.
We're in extraordinary session as we speak.
We're in extraordinary, and that puts limits on the subjects that can be taken up.
The moves by the minority, how you can delay things. It's kind of basically speeds up the process. You mean you call this to kind of meet outside the normal floor period and also to designate an agenda you can move quickly and without or fewer impediments to get things done. They want to get some of these bills done before they go home until January.
Okay, now let's talk about the process. First of all, the Senate meets today. We don't know for how long.
No.
But to make their changes to the bill abolishing GAB and the campaign finance laws.
Yes.
First of all, what have you heard about the changes they want to make to the GAB bill, replacing GAB with an elections and an ethics commission?
The hang-up has been whether or not retired judges should be part of the mix for the ethics commission. So remember, on this bill, they split it into elections commission and ethics commission. The elections commission, everybody seems to agree on, you'd have the four legislative leaders each pick one person for that body. Then the Dem leaders and Republican leaders would nominate separate pools of candidates for the governor to nominate or pick one from each.
But he'd have to stay within that list of candidates.
Yep. Then you get a 3-3 split, Dems and Republican appointees.
Yep.
The ethics commission, and on the elections commission, has those pools have to be municipal or county clerks. There are people who have run elections, the theory being their experience there.
Yeah.
On the ethics side, it'd be six people as well, but there's no, that pool under the bill that the assembly passed, there's no requirement of who has to be in that pool.
Yes.
There are Senate Republicans who want to have retired judges still have a role on this body. They believe that, well, yes, you are having partisan appointees, people who are picked by partisans. Retired judges, in the words of Luther Olson, yes, they come from a perspective either conservative or liberal possibly, but they are kind of risen above, if you will, the pure partisan like gridlock or fights, that there's somebody who could possibly break any impasse and move forward. So there are folks who want retired judges in there. Originally, that bill did have a provision when it was originally drafted to have retired judges in that pool. It was pulled out because some Senate Republicans don't like that idea. They despise the GAB.
Right.
They believe the model that they have with the retired judges did not work, and they want them gone. But the compromise seems to be to have retired judges be part of that mix. The question that they've been talking about is, how do you pick those judges? Is it by the same process used for the elections commission with those pool of clerks or something different?
Okay. Okay, and then the campaign finance changes. The Journal Sentinel is out this morning saying they plan to go back to the idea of making you identify, if you give money, who your employer is and not the nature of your career. Is that the biggest change you look for in the Senate amendments to the campaign finance bill?
A couple of things I heard about. The bill that passed the assembly would raise contribution limits, double them, and also index them going forward.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that the indexing piece may be pulled out. If you think about it, they won't index the minimum wage or the gas tax, but index their own campaign contributions. Not the best optic, if you will. So there's that might change. And also, the bill as it passed upped the number of reports you have to file every year. Most of these treasurers are volunteers. They are not professional CPAs. So the theory was that if you have this increased requirement, it'd be harder to find your local treasurer, your friend who's tracking the stuff to do these reports. So they may pull that back to the normal, what we have right now, which is an off year, January and July, and then election year, you know, January, pre-primary, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so here's the timeline that the leaders want. They want the Senate to approve its amendments to GAB and campaign finance, send them back to the Assembly. The Assembly has already noticed the special extraordinary session on Monday, November 16th to approve the Senate changes, moving it on to Governor Walker's desk. Here's my question. The Senate is supposed to convene, well, within an hour or two. Nobody's seen the amendments. You haven't seen them. The press corps hasn't seen them. The public hasn't seen them. Common Cause hasn't seen them. League of Women Voters. So what are the odds that the Senate's going to get through these changes without any major landmines today?
Oh, well, they're in caucus as we speak, I believe. At least they were last time I checked. They're trying to hash out those final details yet. What's likely going to happen, Republicans will come out of caucus with an agreement at some point, who knows when, then give it to the Democrats. They will then take time to caucus and have their own briefing.
That'll be the first time the Democrats have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Reference Bureau. I'm sure they'll come up on the floor today, too. They'll bring that up a couple times, probably.
Yes.
And then, you know, we'll go into the dead of the night debating these things and going on and on and on. So, but likely they'll come out at some point with the agreement, let us see it, go to the floor, and then go from there. And the question becomes, they've got 40 bills. Most of them are non-controversial. Will they fly through those and then spend a lot of time on these, or what's going to happen?
So you expect that scenario. They're going to pass these other bills, probably caucus, come back on GAB and campaign finance. So you think this timeline, the Senate will complete its action, move it on to the Assembly. You expect that to happen at some point. It may
today,
not be light out.
Early tomorrow. The Republicans are committed to getting this done. They don't want to have this drag out anymore. They don't want to come back next week. I mean, what I've learned in covering the Capitol is that if you have an agreement on Friday, you go to the floor. I don't care what time it is, because if you give them Saturday, Sunday back home in the district, they start getting grief about the details that leak out in the media, and it sets you back to square one come Monday morning. So once you got it, go. I mean, the Democrats, you know, they do have a beef that, look, this is being done without much public notice. We haven't seen these details, but it's the way things have happened for a long time, and so shall go on for a long time.
You're going to spend most of your day in the Senate Press Gallery, and Wisconsin I is going to be covering the entire Senate debate on these on these issues. Is Governor Walker playing a major role in negotiating the final details of the GAB abolishment and campaign finance, or is he pretty much
hands-on? I don't get the impression he's driving the train. I mean, okay. Leah Vukmir, the Senate co-author, is right in the mix of that. Then you have kind of these four Senate Republicans, at least been identified by the Club for Growth as people that they're targeting, you know, Luther Olson, Sheila Harsdorf, Jerry Petrosky, and Rob Coles. They've had robocalls encouraging their constituents to call them and urging them to vote for the GAB bill. They've identified as the ones who've got issues. They've even talked about their concerns. So you have kind of those two camps, if you will, in the Senate Republican
caucus. Okay, but you're expecting, when all is said and done in the Senate today, 18-14 since Senator Roth is on active duty.
We'll see. I mean, you know, talking, for example, Steve Noss, his aide this week, said, look, Steve is waiting for the final details. He's not a fan of retired judges being part of this mix. So might there be a more conservative member of the caucus who says this goes too far? It's like the same questions always with Fitz and that caucus. Can he get 17? Once he gets 17, go on the floor.
Okay. And his history is he's pretty good at rounding up at least 17. Okay, now let's talk about the issues that so they're going to go home. Theoretically, in the fall session, Monday, November 16th, when the Assembly approves these Senate changes.
Yes.
Now let's talk about the issues that they're facing next year. Civil service changes, hiring and firing.
Yep.
Okay. Do you look for the bill that would tell school districts you could only hold referendums in the spring elections, fall elections, to get some traction? Because right now they're passing whenever school districts schedule them and failing.
There were seven this week, actually. Governor Walker, I think last week, said he supports the bill. Now, this idea has floated before. It hasn't really gone anywhere, so maybe this time it has legs. We'll see. That's kind of to be determined. Hasn't gotten, I don't believe, has had a hearing yet in either House or been scheduled for one.
What about the Strobel-led move to change our workers' comp system? Now, that you and I still haven't seen a draft of that one.
No.
Is that something that you think can get through both houses in
those
the spring
session?
Those
are always dicey, especially at the end of the session. Do they have the motivation, if you will, take up something like that, because you get a lot of factions involved then in that process. So I'm not quite sure about that one. But they also have the fetal tissue bill, still it passed committee.
That's right, thanks.
Has not passed either house. That's still being worked on. I reported last week that Amy Loudenbeck, for example, is working on an amendment, as is Joel Clayfish, who's one of the main authors of that bill that Andre Jacques has pushed for years. Also, the other Planned Parenthood bills haven't passed both houses. One cleared the Assembly, but neither passed the Senate. There's that to deal with. With the civil service bill, the question is, will they kind of this ban-the-box revision, so you can't ask up front if you have a conviction, will that be a major hang-up in the Senate? Will they die on the Hill, if you will, for that one and have some kind of like standoff about that? There's that to deal with. I mean, a lot of the stuff is kind of minor. It becomes what else pops up. Like, for example, the bathroom bill. If you're a transgender student, do you get to use the one bathroom for the sex you identify with, or if you use a special bathroom or a unisex bathroom? That bill was pushed off of a public hearing this week and pushed back. Typically speaking, lawmakers don't like to do controversial bills the last month before they go home. John Nygren's heroin bills, the continued package of fighting opiate and heroin addiction, that will be a centerpiece, if you will, of the spring floor period, because it's a feel-good bill. They want to do that. Do they want to deal with GAB and campaign finance in February? Heck no.
No, because you're in the middle of an election year.
Yes.
With four statewide elections. Also, they're going to act next year, don't you think, on the constitutional amendment that would abolish the state treasurer?
It's passed the Assembly now twice, but has not got traction in the Senate. We'll see. You know, Matt Adamczyk, the treasurer, has been pushing very hard for the elimination of his office. There are a few responsibilities left for that right now, so He wants it to go away, but the Senate has not gotten around to doing it yet, so that's still to be determined.
Okay, new subject. My nominee for the best theater this week was a joint finance vote to take Wisconsin $350 million deeper in debt for highway projects. That really intrigued me, because here you had six Assembly Republicans voting yes. Here you had six Senate Democrats voting no, so it was up to the Democrats. All four Democrats said yes, it carried 10-6. Mm-hmm. That really surprised me. Can you name the last time that you had the 12 Republicans on joint finance split 6-6?
No. In fact, the only time I can think of, like, I'm trying to think back to a time when the party broke ranks, like a decade ago, and Brian Burke was still co-chair of finance, and I think it was one member, one Dem member.
2001.
There was that, and when Kevin Schabelsky broke ranks and voted for the budget repair bill in 2001 to get it out 9-7. That's the last time I can remember anything like that on a major piece of legislation.
Which is why I nominated for my drama of the week. But normally, JR, you and I know that when party leaders are split like that, they're not going to go out in public and have this major division. So why did they do that?
Senate Republicans have a different view of that $350 million in contingency bonding than Assembly Republicans. Remember when the budget was put together by Governor Walker, he wanted to borrow $1.3 billion for roads. Now, he didn't borrow for anything else, no vertical projects, no buildings, but all for roads, $1.3 billion. Both sides said no way. They agreed on $500 million, but they put $350.
That was the opening bid. Yes. They loaded $500 million in the budget, and then this unique provision, not the full legislature, but joint finance can go back and issue the credit card for another $350 million, which happened.
And Assembly Republicans, if you ask them, they feel like, hey, that money was supposed to be released. The understanding was not if, but when and for what projects. Senate Republicans are like, no, we feel like that's something we should not be doing because it ups the debt payments, kicks the can down the road, et cetera, et cetera. So you have this standoff. Now, what's interesting, too, is the Dems all voted yes and complained about it, so we're not talking about long-term fixes for the transportation fund, not talking about a gas tax increase. They didn't get anything other than their projects. So in the end, Nygren got this thing through without having to really cede much to the minority party to get it done.
Why did the Democrats vote for it? Because one school of thought is they voted to worsen our transportation situation to just for some political advantage. And the other thought is that, hey, they need their road projects as much as Republicans. So which school of thought do you subscribe to?
Verona Road, that was right next, if not in, right next to John Erpenbach's district.
Erpenbach said, my epic commuters use that.
That is a major intersection there on Madison's south side. They needed to get that done. There are Democrats up in the Fox Valley who want 10-441 done. You can go on down the list. They have needs as well.
Yeah, so that was very intriguing. And also, this P.S. from the Fiscal Bureau, as a result of going $350 million more in debt, in next fiscal year, debt service, 21% of all transportation tax collections. That's no small number. That's double from 10 years ago. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, new the food share abuse bill. Well, let's talk about the budget. The budget said if you are getting food share benefits, we'd like you to pass a drug test. That's blocked by a lawsuit.
Yes. The Walker administration basically filed a preemptive lawsuit because their feeling is the feds have said it's not going to happen. So they're saying you have to let us do this. And the feds a couple weeks ago said, well, actually there's a process you go through where you apply for a waiver, we talk about this, and then you can sue us if you want to, you know, right, if we deny it. But that's caught in federal court right now.
Yeah, it is. But that didn't stop the Assembly from acting on three bills this week. They would put a photo ID on food share on the food share IDs, although the photos would not have to be shown to the cashiers. Now, remember, a month ago, the Republicans wanted that. You'd have to get a federal waiver to make that mandatory to show the photo ID to a cashier to get a food stamp benefit.
Jesse Kramer, the freshman lawmaker who was the sponsor of the bill, basically said the feds aren't going to allow it. So there's no point in trying to force it because let's do this instead as a way to. And they still argue that if you put a picture on, it kind of adds a level of security, if you will. But the issue is it's $7.4 million up front to do it, and I believe $2 million annually.
$2 million
after
annually
that.
To maintain these photos on food share ID.
And there are three or four Republicans in the Assembly who voted no, citing that cost. The question kind of comes in the Senate, do they go along with spending that money? Now, maybe if it's in a budget overall and fits in the pieces, they would do that. But there's some train of thought that Senate Republicans won't go along with that money right now because It's not much in the piggy bank at this very moment to be spending money like that.
And the second bill would say, if you haven't used your food share benefits in a six-month period, you would lose them. Hmm. I mean, the state would grab them. There's also state cost to do that. I think it scores at $1.2 million or something like that.
But their idea is from Republicans that this program is ripe for abuse and fraud, the selling of food share cards, the trading of them. This is a way to kind of try and root that out, and the expense is worth it to keep the program's true intent. That's their argument.
And then the third bill would say, if you ask for a fifth food share ID in 1 year, we're going to investigate you.
Yes, but the bill is amended again to kind of lower it. So at one point, there was going to be a cutoff, but now it's like, well, if you ask for the fifth card, we'll do this. The sixth card, we'll do this. And it, so there really isn't a hammer, if you will, as much as there was in the original bill, again, because the feds have these rules that say you can do this, but not this. And
right.
So they had a nod, if you will, the federal requirements.
Okay, so I went to the Department of Health Services website, and I got these stats on food share because I was just curious. Almost more than 1 in 7 Wisconsin residents participate in food share. The average benefit in September was $213 per household. The number of households on food share increased 28% since 2010. So this is like waving a big flag at Assembly Republicans. Anything that grows 28% is going to get their attention, right? 55% of the food share participants are female, 45% are male, 58% are adults, 42% are minors, 42% of households include one resident who is elderly, blind, or disabled. So when the Democrats say this is a pick on the poor, what do you think, JR?
You know, they've been trying to make the argument that if you go back the last couple budgets, they've added work requirements to various programs, drug testing requirements, and the Dem argument has been, look, these programs tend to help people who are disadvantaged or lower end of the social economic status. Why are we doing this? Why are we trying? And the Republican argument is, Governor Walker says it all the time, it's not about a handout, it's a
hand up.
We don't measure success in Wisconsin by how many people are on the rolls, but how many get off the rolls. He wants to move you into the private sector. That is his entire philosophy, and that's what a lot of this is geared toward.
But correct me if I'm wrong, didn't I just hear you say you wonder how these bills are going to fare in the Senate?
A little bit because of the cost. You know, there is a cost to do these things, and is it worth it, especially, not to pick on the bill about the photo ID, but especially if you're not going to have a hammer, if you will. That's the argument I've heard from some Republicans of why do this if you don't have a real, true, guaranteed outcome, if you will.
Okay, new subject. Oscar Mayer closing the Madison plant, been mm-hmm. open between 90 and 100 years. The same day, S.C. Johnson announces it's moving 175 jobs to Chicago. A few weeks ago, GE says we're going to take some of these GE assembly generator assembly plants to Canada. How big of a political problem is this drip, drip, drip loss of jobs for the governor?
It's an excellent question. You've already seen Democrats say, where was Wedick with Oscar Mayer, for example? Governor, where were you after the layoffs? I think they were in August or something like that. Were you guys reaching out? Interesting note, Iowa's giving them $4.5 million.
But Iowa's losing jobs in Davenport.
Yes. Even to lose jobs, they're giving them $5 million to build a new plant.
Right.
What were you guys doing to try and prevent this? Governor Walker said yesterday, look, this is not about Wisconsin. It's about other forces, these consolidations going on.
The governor also said, ask Warren Buffett why we're closing the Oscar Mayer plant with the 1,000 jobs to be lost by 2017.
But there is a political liability in that Republicans have talked about this great environment they've created in Wisconsin with tort reform, tax cuts. They've lowered the manufacturing and ag taxes down to basically nothing, or they will get to nothing at some point. If you're doing all these things and these are still leaving Wisconsin, what's going on? That's kind of the opening for Democrats, if you will, of, well, you're not doing things that you need to do,
right,
or you've damaged our reputation. Now, I mean, there are greater forces at play than just tax credits from Wisconsin in these decisions. This is a global economy at this point. It's not just about us. But it becomes whose message resonates. Mm-hmm. If you're impacted by Oscar Mayer and you lost your job, who do you believe? And that may, in the end, determine who ends up taking the blame, if you will, if there is any, for these decisions. It's also not just this. I mean, S.C. Johnson is moving, 175 jobs to Chicago for a better talent pool?
Yes.
In marketing, media, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But it's also investing $80 million in the manufacturing
plant.
Thank
you for saying that, because that is the rest of the story.
Joy Global is closing a plant. There are kind of a lot of things happening at once, and we've also seen these mass layoff notices. Now, these are ones that are bigger kind of percentage of your workforce. We've already had more this year than had all last year. I mean, it's kind of an odd juxtaposition of Walker saying, look, our unemployment rate is down to 4.whatever%, but all these big names are leaving. What's going on?
Okay, but let's look at some wins. I mean, Amazon just opened this huge complex in Kenosha. Isn't that 1,400 jobs? However, I don't think those jobs are going to pay as well as those GE generator assembly jobs. And remember that huge contract, federal contract that Oshkosh Trucks just got?
So it shows the complexity of a global economy that, you know, there are all kinds of forces at play in what's going on. But again, who ends up getting the blame? And, you know, let's be honest. If you're governor, you're going to take some of it because you are governor. You're overseeing it. When that plant up in, was it Sheboygan or somewhere out there left, that was a big issue for Governor Doyle. When we didn't land a Honda plant, you know, that went to Indiana, that was an issue for it's Doyle's fault because he's not created an environment that's good for Wisconsin to attract jobs. Well, now it's on the other foot if you're a partisan. It's Governor Walker's in charge. He's going to take some of the hits because of this.
And, well, Dane County Democrats now have written Wiedek saying, what did you know? What are you going to do?
Well, Wiedek is an easy scapegoat for them, too. I mean, it's so many problems. It's an easy punching bag, you know.
But your point is there's some political upside for Democrats because this is this back and forth. Whoever's the governor gets blamed or gets the credit.
It could be. But then where was Mayor Soglin? Where was Dane County Executive Parisi? I mean, those are other questions that others are asking. And, again, if you're impacted, it's who do you believe? Who do you feel like you're to blame? That might, in the end, take a while to play out.
That's why the State Journal headline, finger pointing begins. Okay, now let's have some fun. State Representative Joel Klefisch, who often enters the press room in full camo, is just amazing. Sometimes he even wear the blackened eyes. You've got to see this guy. He says that Wisconsin is in a foot race with Minnesota on this major policy issue. Which state's hunters will be the first to legally wear blaze pink? Pretty amazing. Has it come to this, JR? The assembly passed it, broke its rules, waived some rules to pass it. Pretty interesting.
I don't hunt, but yes.
Okay. And an expert says blaze pink can easily be seen by other hunters and not as easily seen by the Bambis out there.
So I'm wearing it today.
Yeah, I see that. Well, we have some very creative people at Wisconsin Eye. So they're going to illustrate this debate by running a segment from the movie Funny Face 1957. And you and I are going to be in camo pink, my friend. So let's run that audio.
From now on, girls. Pink, pink. Pink, pink when you shop for summer clothes. Pink, pink. Pink, pink if you want that kelp to shows. Red is dead, blue is through, green's obscene, brown's taboo, and there is not the slightest excuse for plum abuse or chartreuse. Think pink, forget that Dior says black and rust. Think pink, who cares if the new look has no bust? Now, I wouldn't presume to tell a woman what a woman ought to think, but tell her if she's gotta think. Think pink.
For pants, pink for shoes,
razzle. The gun deer hunt season begins on November 21. Mm-hmm. We're going to interview, Wisconsin Eye's got an interview next Wednesday with Kevin Wallenfang to preview that deer hunt. But if I show up on that deer hunt in pink, those deer are going to be dead from laughing. That's okay, moving on. How's that for a segue, a transition? Okay. Now it's time for the WisPolitics stock report.
Rising, John Nygren. Now, he did something fairly smart this week. He took, remember, the $350 million in contingency bonding was split up. $200 million in the first year, $150 million in the second. Senate Republicans didn't want to meet this year on $200 million. Right. Do you think they want to meet next year in an election year on $150? Nygren put them together into one amendment, got it through the committee, kept his caucus together, got the Dems on board, and muscled that through. Now, on the downside, he cleans up a mess that prevents us from dealing with the crisis at hand. Let's be honest. The capital only acts when there's a crisis. And we have put off for another 2 years now dealing with the long-term solution for the transportation fund, which, quite frankly, there isn't one.
And we put it off for 4 years. Go ahead.
But that said, he did something pretty smart getting that through the way he did, delivered that money for those projects that his members really want. They were able to overcome the Senate opposition and avoid a fight next year on it. So,
Follow-up question. Did that vote, six Assembly Republicans yes, six Senate Republicans no, is that going to be a problem with those two camps working together in the future?
You know, they've had differences before. They had differences of opinion about even doing the bonding in the budget. Remember the fights back in May, June, and July about, like, well, how much are we going to bond? And Robin Voss and Wayne will go to zero, and Governor Walker going, well, go ahead. I mean, like, you know, there was a standoff about that months ago. That hasn't changed. And the issue is going to be that what do you do in the next budget? Governor Walker has said, no tax increases or fee increases unless you find an offset somewhere else. There is no money right now, unless things go gangbusters and the general fund is flush with cash, which will still be eaten up by Medicaid and schools and other things.
Yes.
There isn't money there to offset that a gas tax increase right now. So what do you do long term?
Okay, but Senate Democrat Erpenbach said, I'm gonna push to raise a gas tax. And mm-hmm. Barca has indicated that's not a bad idea. So there's some additional dynamics there. The Democrats are actually beginning to skate out ahead of the Republican logjam on transportation.
What's interesting is if you ask members of the Joint Finance Committee, I think you have at least 9, if not more, votes for a gas tax increase, including Republicans. The issue is those guys in the committee see it differently than the rank and file. I don't know how you get a gas tax hike, for example, through the Assembly GOP caucus, because a lot of those guys who are freshmen going, oh, we don't want to get, we didn't come here to raise taxes. End of story. No tax increases. So it's a different dynamic there. I'm not sure how it gets through the both houses.
But they didn't come here either to have their major highway projects mm-hmm. delayed. Okay, moving on. Mixed. School referendum.
So I mentioned earlier there were 7 this week.
Yeah.
Again, you had a big-time ticket, $32 million shot down. If you look at them, 5 passed, 2 were rejected. But if you look at the dollar figures, it was more rejected than approved. Oh, by the way, this is kind of a trend we're seeing where big-ticket items get shot down at referendum. There's also this bill out there we talked about with Strobel to limit when you could ask mm-hmm. School or voters for approval to go above the caps. It would go to from any time you get on the ballot to regularly scheduled spring and fall elections. You also couldn't go back for 2 years after one failed, which would be no. I mean, the conservative complaints have been
those are big changes.
The conservative complaint has been that schools get knocked down 1, 2, 3 times and keep going back until they wear down voters.
Yep.
And that they schedule in times so they know they can marshal their supporters to the polls because it's not a normal election date. And get it passed.
Low turnout,
this
higher the odds of passing.
The Dems are saying, and school advocates saying, well, look, this is happening because of what you guys have given us from state aid and the caps you put in place for property taxes. We are suffering. We need this option. And, oh, by the way, what about local control? So you had that standoff. It would be a good question about what that passes next spring.
That's a good mix. Falling.
Josh Zepnik.
Representative Josh Zepnik.
There are a lot of politicians in Wisconsin who have been busted for drunk driving. He is not the first, won't be the last. The question for Zepnik is, how does he personally handle this? You can overcome these things in Wisconsin if you handle it correctly. So we'll see what happens going forward. One thing for Zepnik, too, is interesting is that his sister was killed by a drunk driver on her bicycle, I think, in 1990. When she was 26. He's talked about that before.
Yes.
It adds to the kind of the, I don't want to say shock, but the kind of like, well, what was going on here with him being arrested? Oh, by the way, he's running for the city council in the spring against Bob Donovan. So there are all these things that are going on that, again, if he handles it correctly, if he kind of takes his punishment, says, I made a mistake, owns up to it, and finds a way forward, you can overcome this in Wisconsin. But it's not the best headline you want out of a spring election.
Yeah. I also agree with your falling Representative Zepnik. That's a tragedy. We'll see how it plays out. Okay. I think you and I have got dates in the Senate to see what happens. So I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for this week.